Accession number 30024.
Bilbo Showreel 8.
Sorry. And I came to this. Oh, it was a beautiful farmyard. Old cobbles, old big square. I mean, in reality, it had been lovely to visit that farm as it was. You know, it's a huge complex. And, oh, how's that going to get out on the road from here? me trying to sneak across this great thing in case somebody had a thing. Fortunately for me, I don't think it was too early for them to be awake properly, you know, and if there was anybody about. Anyway, I managed to get out onto the road, and my stamina must have been real temper, you know, they carried me, otherwise I should have been flaked out. Anyway, I kept going and kept going. I haven't got a clue where I was. I haven't got a clue where my direction was. Oh, never mind, I'm free. That was a glorious feeling. And then I came up with a couple of French prisoners. Because French prisoners were allowed parole. We weren't. And they'd been in a sick bay. And were trying to catch their small party up. So I joined them. And we came to this other small place. You couldn't call it a village in my view. But there was some sort of burgomaster there. And there's the French interpreter. He seemed to know what was going. And he said, no, never mind. You come with one of us, you see. So I signed as one of them. I don't know whether W. Bushell was anything like French for the name. But I'm W. Bushell. And I had, with signing that, I got a day's or 2 days ration, pucker ration ticket off this German bloke in charge of the village or whatever it was. I hadn't got a clue. And thank you very much. So with my Deutschmark and that, I couldn't get anything else, but I was able to buy a loaf, but not there. I wasn't very far away, but it was the other end of the so-called village, because it seemed to be out, you know, really out in the open. There was a morning bakery going, and through that I was able to buy a loaf and get change out of my one Deutschmark. So I went merry on my way. Actually, I'd had a drink of milk and I'd got a day's rations and I got a loaf. So I had a little bit nibble here, nibble there and whatnot. But I wasn't in good physical shape, there's no doubt about it. I went in here and then I came, the first indication, oh yes, I came to a reasonable village. That was where I got my Italian map, and I got in conversation with quite a nice elderly couple, a German couple, and I can only hear that they were evacuees. See, well, I didn't know I was a kick in the pants off Dresden, you see. And I was talking to them like that. And they said, oh, and that says the war's going to end on the radio. I said, what's going to end? Oh, yes. And as a matter of fact, they weren't quite sure, but that was the name, that, you know, the radio they had, they were listening to it. And they were all in, oh, good, you see. Anything is, I haven't got a clue where I was. So that was that. And out of my change with them, I got in contact, I had a conversation with the Italian officer that gave me that map, and I was able to get a bowl of soup to eat some more bread. So that was more sustenance. Well, that was all I could do. So best of luck both ways. The Italian officer has given me that. He says, I can't do anything. The way I'm fixed, I can't do anything. So I had to leave it at that. And off I went on my merry way. Two pantsers then, eventually during the day, caught me up. What's the matter with you? Like, you know, no honor. We're going to the Anglo-American lines. No Russians are going to capture us. Oh, no, 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 no Russians. I said, what's going on, you see? I was so ignorant of what news there was. Anyway, they were killing me by trying to keep up with them, and they were killing me. One bloke wanted to give me his schmeiser. I said, no, I don't want a good damn thing. And the other bloke had a belt of hand grenades, and he was merrily throwing them over the hedge, laughing his head off. They were absolutely wild, you know. And no. And all I knew that they, whatever was happening, the war was ending, and they were going to the American line, the Anglo-American lines, sooner than the Russians. That was all I knew at that time. And then we came to Liebstadt. And going through the street, little lane, this American boy was getting his hand bandaged. And Elsa Jentsch, who turned out to be, that's her name, the lady handing him a glass of Apfelsaft through the casement, like that, you see. And I took that one look and I thought, no, I've got to have a drink. I must have something. You know, my mouth was like cotton wool. I said, you, best of luck to you. Go on, I can't go anymore. I must stop. Blow it. And I went across and I asked the lady, haven't seen a kind of finish, but I'll have you another one for me, please. And she looked at me. She said, oh, yeah, you see. And she went away, came back. And this bloke said, hey, do you speak their lingo? I said, well, I can get by. And then he explained about his pals, you see. Elsa came back with a drink. He said, wait a minute, you're an Englishman, you see. And I said, yes, I'm England. And that was it. And with my small knowledge of German, we got on, you see. And I explained about this bloke's, these chaps. And they apparently, I knew what had happened because I didn't realise what it was all about. But I'd come through myself, and that the Russians were nearer than you thought. Like, and what they were doing was sending their aircraft over, dropping light calendar bombs haphazardly, but really to put the fear of Allah as they moved up into the ordinary people, you see, because the forces were nil really. And well, that's my conjecture anyway. But these blokes weren't quick enough to duck, you see, and they were caught up with some shrapnel. Two of them had superficial lower limb wounds. This bloke had a hand wound. He's only a youngster. The next one up was, he was nasty. I doubt whether he survived. In the end, I don't know a lot about him. He had a hole in his shoulder that came out the centre of his back, and his right leg was fractured top and bottom, you see. He was in a mess. And the other chappie had a bullseye right through his navel. Well, he was dead within 48 hours. 24, I think. 24 or 48. Because he was laid out on the kitchen table. There's nothing we could do about it. And they asked me, you see, could I explain? Well, all I could do was stay with them at the time and see what there could be done to help. Well, give the Jentsches their due. They gave up the bottom floor of the cottage. There was other people upstairs. There were evacuees. They're from Dresden evacuees, I think they were, like, in the outcome of it, but I didn't know any. And anyway, the poor chappie, he expired. The chappie with the bad limb, he had to go to another cottage who looked after him. I kept a certain eye on him, but I couldn't do anything. And there was an old man who was supposed to be a village doc or a doctor, but he had no kit, you see. They had nothing. Paper bandages. They had no proper linen bandages. And as I said, the poor chap died. But that was it, just at the time, a couple of days, and the Russians were nearer than you thought because they came into the village. And that was, that was when I was really scared for a moment, because they were different to the Russians I knew. The Russians prisoners that I'd been like amongst them with were real cannon fodder. Peasants who didn't know their alphabet, but they'd take an electric motor to pieces and put it back again. That sort of style, you know, that sort of stuff. But these blokes, they were a nasty crew. They were highly trained, like the Africa Corps that I'd been mixed with, you see. And they were armoured as well. And they were triggered happy, because they were knocking off all the drink they could. And they were really enjoying themselves when they come to a halt. And that was when nobody could speak German. And I couldn't, oh God, you dickhead. Anyway, in the end, they recognised the, American, Cameron, Cameron. Me. I said, oh, English. No. Englander. No. Inglesi. No. Anglia. Oh, you see. Oof. And that was that me off the but that was the only time that get excitable, you see. And I had nothing. I had no weapon. I had no, couldn't take them on by any chance. That was the only time I was a bit scared because of ignorance and on their part. And anyway, fortunately for us, they recognised the wounded chaps. Joe Soap here was acting as best he could as interpreter. When the Russians moved in, the day after they moved in, one of their young officers, who could have been the young officer in charge, I don't know, he's only a young fellow, but he'd been having a free ride on a motorbike with one of the Russian female girls on a pillion. But his tank, could stop better than and quicker than him. So he hit the back of it. He ended up in a plaster cast. So they requisitioned a bed on the first floor for him, with a guard over, you know. That helped a little bit where the billet was concerned. The Russian girl, I caught, she had pieces out of her knees, because they only had half socks and boots up that way, and then a kilted skirt, bare knees. And God, the lumps in it. Well, I hadn't got much, you see, with the doc. I don't know what he'd happened to him. And there was me, Joseph again. Back home, Joseph again. And she declined. No, she'd go back to her own lines. And I said, thank goodness for that, you know. The farther away, the better. Now, subsequent to that, the chappie that died was moved away, obviously. Now, I don't know whether the Germans and the Russians had anything to do, or whether just the Russians, because they stuck over the village. But he's buried there somewhere. Whatever they did with him, I don't know. And I didn't get a look in. The chappie with the wounded that was in the other cottage, the only knowledge I know, it took 5 days for the Germans to move him, and the Russians to move him. But whether he survived, pure conjecture, because the way he was neglected, you see, he couldn't do anything. It was pitiful, really. These other chappies with superficial, they weren't too bad, you see, although they had to be helped, really, because they couldn't walk. And the bloke with the hand, he was okay, as much as that could. Well, have I got any dates here? It was actually, no, this is when dates get a bit out of hand now, because no calendar and anything.
How long had it been since the time where you left the party going to the American camp at the barn to when you arrived? at the German village?
I can only assume it was literally a whole 24 hours walking. We had a rest now and then, but theoretically, like as you recall it, we're still under guard. I said, "Guards, come on. What knowledge they had, we don't know. They may not have had. They may have only had the same knowledge as us. They were detailed to keep walking, and that was that. And I don't know quite how. I never found out what happened to the gang I left behind. How they were picked up, or who picked them up, if any. You see, because I was in Liebstadt. I had roughly 5 days. 2 days. Second day, the Russian took over. And then I used to have to go with Elsa first thing in the morning to the local baker, because the Russians had taken over everything and they were allowed the German population a ration of bread. They may have allowed them something else, but that didn't concern me. I knew I had to go because it was a bit embarrassing. I could take Elsa with their basket to the head of the queue, as escort like us, and bring her back, come back with her. And that's that, and be general helpful if anything. But what the ladies did, out of a white tablecloth, they made a great big red cross on it and hung it out of the bedroom window. What happened? It became a first aid station, glorified, but nothing you could do much, unfortunately. I did have a couple of queer cards. That's why I don't like Serbs and I don't like Croats. But that's another thing, that personal. And then it'd be about the fifth day, as a guess. By then we knew the war had ended, you see. And the family, Albert and Elsa, and the rest of the people, they were willing the Russians to come because of what they'd been through otherwise, you see, in their own way. Well, they didn't know at that time they were going to jump from the frying pan into the fire, because they became Eastern Germany and communistic ruled, you see. But nevertheless, Albert Jensch, Elsa's husband, he was a cripple. And that's one thing. He was a hot foot, ready for the communists to come. He says, "You know, Wilhelm, when your own people do this to you, you have no longer any faith in your country." And that's why they were waiting, like they didn't mind. But they didn't know what was waiting for them, you see, as time went on. But he was an optician in... He never said so, but I assume if he was an optician, he was an optician in Dresden. And because he was a bit slow on the political uptake, they'd taken his trade from him and he'd gone through a concentration camp for correction and ended up a cripple. And that's when he said it, "When your own people do this to you, you have no more faith." Like, I don't know what else, what had happened to her. I suppose she had just have to go along with her husband, you know. But they were quite decent, like they were the ones that offered a helping hand, but they didn't know what was going to happen. And I did speak for them, but it didn't make any difference. So then, at that time, the name was Mudge, you see, anywhere. And anyway, this large armoured convoy came into the village, and it was an American medical unit as well. And whatever it was, I think the MO in charge of the medical unit, the Russians put him under arrest. Anyway, there's a hold of at least 2 hours or more while I was argy-bargy. In that time, the chaps had been evacuated into, like, ambulances, the armoured cars, you know. And I was going to ride on a tank, but the MO decided, no, you get in an ambulance with the others, you see. And but just before that, I was saying, like, goodbye to the Yenches and the other people as they would have been associated. And this Russian colonel came up, and he was the only one that spoke German that I'd encountered. And we swapped cigarettes, as a matter of fact. When I say swap cigarettes, I'd already got tons of cigarettes off the Yanks. But they, oh, they give you any, you know. Anyway, so I swapped a cigarette with him, and he had a scented thing. And we were able just to say a few words together in German, see. But he was the only Russian that I knew or an experience that spoke German. Yeah. All the others were absolutely, but they were very fierce types. They were really highly trained men, you know, and they were trigger happy too.
How were they treating the German civilians in Liebstadt?
That's what I say. They didn't know they were going to jump from the frying pan into the fire. They'd already experienced the influx as the Russians took over the village as they moved in, you see. Now, most probably they moved further on eventually, but I can only speak from my experience. They were a bit rough, really. They didn't take any chances. And they were overlords automatically. There was nobody to say boo against them. And if anybody had any a little stock of schnapps or wine or something, bingo, that went. They could please themselves, you see. I don't know whether there's any looting. I don't know. I personally don't know of any in my sort of small world, like at that time. I used to go to the end of the village while I was there, not all the time, with a younger person, well, a teenage girl perhaps she might have been, and I used to escort her to the end of the village where a cottage was there. I've got a feeling she used to go there and check somebody. It could have been an elderly person, it might have been a military bod lying low, I wouldn't know. But I used to go see her to the end of the room, wait for her while she went in. I just went into this one room that she went off somewhere, when she might have gone upstairs or further on. But there's a pair of binoculars on a debilitated radio set where it most probably had been destroyed, you know. And I used to look at the surrounding countryside and the woods with these lovely binoculars, which I could have appropriated most probably, but it didn't bother me. I didn't think of it. I had, I don't know, many thousand Deutschmarks in my greatcoat pockets hanging up in the hall of the house, of the cottage. And if they'd have searched that like that, the Russians would have. But they were, that money was useless, poor things. They got it back again, the family. And the only people that had, like, when I let them. They had to live, you see. I was all right, Jack. I couldn't afford to be back. None of them. That's the way these thoughts go. I let them have it back. I also had a very, very nice wristed watch. And I could have helped myself to that. But the prince, he said, no. I will need it for food eventually, like. I said, well, yes, I know the drill further on, because I got denuded of everything after the ITIs, these thieving so-and-so. Anyway, well, what you had left. So that was that. The only thing is, I had a signet ring off Dr. Gustav Grimm. And I was unable to hand it back to him or his Frau. So that's, I came home with that. But unfortunately, I mean, unfortunately, I lost it, which I was a bit upset about. And my wife, like, she thought, she was disappointed that it was while I was in Southend, actually, somehow or other, it came off my finger, you know. And That was the only sort of bad thing that there was, actually. I did have a postcard from somebody's relation who was a German prisoner of war up north somewhere. But I couldn't, because I'd come from the Russian sector, I couldn't put him in danger by writing him back for him to write back. You see, it would have put his family a little bit in jeopardy. I had to play safe there, and I knew more than him in a way, you know, through my experiences, you see. Otherwise, that was a, everything had finished, and it was only my experience of being that brief moment on my own in the Russian zone and eventually coming home. I don't know if you've got any more questions there that I can fill in.